Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering kayaks, canoes, and outdoor equipment for anyone wanting to experience the natural beauty of Wisconsin water. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
The homicide count in Milwaukee so far this year already equals the total number of murders in 2014. And in fact, that homicide count is going up. The Milwaukee County Medical Examiner's Office is investigating a homicide as the result of a shooting last night. Authorities say a 22-year-old man was shot during a dispute with two others. He died at the scene despite life-saving efforts. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July 30th. In an op-ed piece, U.S. Congresswoman Gwen Moore pointed a finger at Governor Walker's loosening of gun controls and his relationship with the NRA as one of the reasons for the spike in gun violence. Are Walker's policies abetting or abating the gun violence problem in Milwaukee? We will talk with Congresswoman Moore coming up at about 6:30. We will also get the take of Jim Fendry, who is the director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, and we'll welcome your questions and your thoughts on this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, what do you think? Should we have universal background checks in Wisconsin? Would that help? Was eliminating the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases in Wisconsin a mistake or not? Let's welcome our guest, Jim Fendry, director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, former police officer for 20 years. He writes the blog Aim for Understanding, which is part of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Purple Wisconsin blog. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
It's good to have you with us. So Milwaukee saw a total of 86 homicides for the entire year of 2014. We matched that 86 a week or so ago, and now, according to the AP, Milwaukee County authorities are investigating what could be, another shooting homicide. What's going on as far as you're concerned?
Well, I don't know that anybody really knows. This certainly isn't limited to Milwaukee. It's taking place across the entire United States and, interestingly, all over the world and just about all at the same time. And when I say all over the world, that means in many, many countries where people have never been allowed to have firearms, at least without the most strict controls possible. So no one has come up with an answer of what's taking place. However, one thing is unique to all of this, whether you're talking about a country like France, or we're talking about Mexico, or we're talking about the United States. While the data indicates it's happening all over the country, in truth, it's not. It's always happening in just a small area. When we look at the city of Milwaukee and follow it by the data driven by the Milwaukee Police Department, you'll see that there are some areas in the city of Milwaukee, we call those zip codes, that have never had a homicide since Milwaukee was organized. And the concentration of homicides is in just a couple of zip codes in the city. Other than that, it's as unlikely to happen in the rest of Milwaukee as it might be in the most remote area of the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, there was a news conference last week where AG Schimmel and other law enforcement got together and declared war on gun violence or on violence in Milwaukee. And it was pointed out that roughly 10% of the offenders drive about 50% of the crime. We need to focus on the right bad guys. That's the answer?
Well, that's part of the answer. If I can be facetious for a moment, the declaration of war asks one question. What were you doing before that to stop this type of incident from taking place? And you can imagine, again, if I can be facetious for a second time, the bad guys are just shaking in their boots hearing this. The truth is, they don't care. They don't interested in what laws are passed, and they certainly don't care what type of gun control laws exist or would come to exist. Only honest, law-abiding people are affected by the laws. Other than that, you have to look at different factors. And if I may, just for a moment, and let me also preface it with this. This is in no way a criticism of Milwaukee's chief of police, Ed Flynn. He's, I'm sure, doing the best job he can do according to what he believes is the best thing. One of the things that he had instituted for the city police department is a no-pursuit policy. So what ends up happening is if a Milwaukee squad decides they're going to pull a car over, and if that car flees when the lights go on, what the officers are required to do at that point, with the only exception being if they know that the person driving the car is involved in a violent felony, not just a felony, but a violent felony. Under any other conditions, the squad is required to pull over to the side of the road, contact the supervisor, and have a supervisor come to the scene, and then they issue a report called a non-pursuit report that then goes into the files. The bad guys, on the other hand, have come to realize this, and it also has resulted in a number of other tragedies. Their attitude is this, is if the squad throws on the lights, they throw the gas pedal down to the floor, speeding ahead, regardless of traffic, regardless of time of day, regardless of traffic controls. The idea is if they can go full speed for two blocks and not have an accident, they're home free. And we're seeing more and more of this taking place. In addition to it, our police officers have been so handcuffed by more rules and regulations, and I'm not indicating that those are all bad, but they're so handcuffed. And certainly with the tragic situation that took place in Red Arrow Park some time back, which resulted in the officer being fired for violating a policy, most officers are hesitant to do anything. And the bad guys know this. So at the bottom end is this, is regardless of how well-intended a policy may be, and remember the chief's policy of non-pursuit was accurately based upon the fact that most chases are the result of some traffic offense or some other minor offense that altogether too often ends in an accident. And going back to the bottom line is so many of the policies in effect have this idea of intending to do something, but it's what the unintended consequences result in. And if you don't mind me just taking this opportunity to add in one more thing, we're beginning to see now that portions of people and portions of the government that do a lot of research are now beginning to call gun-free zones killing zones, because that's where the guys go forward to do some of their mass shootings, in places where they're less likely to encounter a citizen who's armed.
Yeah, but the gun-free zone is not an issue in Milwaukee, is it? That's not where most of the homicides are taking place?
Well, when we look at some of the shootings that had taken place, I believe that the church shooting that had taken place in Brookfield, no firearms were allowed. There have been a number of spots, and I can't remember just offhand where it is. So it's probably not an issue of what you want to talk about today. But whatever we as human beings do to try to improve anything in life, we always hope it'll work. But altogether, too often, there are unintended consequences. And keep this in mind as the mantra for discussion about any type of gun laws. And by the way, I'm certainly not against many gun control laws. I'm certainly not against the policy that was put forth when the Department of Justice, through the head, Brad Schimmel, decided to declare war, so to speak. We have no opposition to good action such as that. But no matter what you do, the bad people don't care. The dangerous people don't care. It doesn't make any difference to them. They don't obey the laws. They're not interested in what they are.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll get Jim Fendry to react to U.S. Representative Gwen Moore's op-ed piece that appeared recently on Salon.com that was headlined, "Milwaukee is drowning in a sea of gun violence, and Scott Walker wants to make it worse." Representative Moore says that Governor Walker has a destructive alliance with the NRA. We'll get Jim Fendry to react to that after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Congresswoman Gwen Moore, the U.S. representative for Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, penned an op-ed piece that appeared recently on Salon.com. It was headlined, "Milwaukee is drowning in a sea of gun violence, and Scott Walker wants to make it worse." We will be welcoming in U.S. Representative Gwen Moore coming up at 6:30 to talk for a few minutes with us about her thoughts on this. We also asked Jim Fendry, the director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, to join us with his response, and we're welcoming your questions. Do you think that Governor Walker's policies are compounding the gun violence problem in Milwaukee or reducing it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Jim Fendry, what's your reaction to that headline that Scott Walker is making the gun violence problem in Milwaukee worse by his pro-gun policies? For example, dismantling the state's 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases?
Well, the answer is quite clear, Joy. If his policies were increasing the gun violence situation, it wouldn't be limited to a small section of the city of Milwaukee. It would be throughout Milwaukee County, and throughout the state. It doesn't. Nothing has changed. Again, the mass number of homicides that are taking place and the shootings that are taking place that don't result in homicide are generally all limited to one small section of the city. And often when it takes place outside of those zip codes, we often find that the people who are involved actually live and reside back in the zip codes where most of the crime is taking place. Take a look at the waiting period. And by the way, Representative Gwen Moore and I are old friends from the day that she was in the state legislature. Mm-hmm. And I think quite a bit of the lady. She's a very, very fine woman and a very good legislator. But what ends up happening is altogether too many people that have opinions on these issues don't really know too much about gun laws, what gun laws are in place, what works, what doesn't work. And this includes not only those that are clamoring for more gun control, occasionally it involves people who are very pro-gun as well. They just don't understand. I was there when the waiting period went into effect back in the 70s, and there wasn't much objection to it, nor did we object to it, nor did NRE object to it, because this was just the beginning of some tougher gun controls being introduced through the state of Wisconsin. And what it was brought there for was so that law enforcement would have enough time to do a background check on some individual. If they felt they needed to do it, they had the resources to do it, and they had the time to do it. It was just that for law enforcement. Today we have the mandatory background check on just not just handguns, but all guns. Anytime a person buys a firearm from a federally licensed dealer, they have to go through the background check. This is something that has been supported by NRA, been supported by us. In fact, the background check was NRA's answer to our opponent's waiting period law. The Brady Foundation merely wanted a 7-day wait on the purchase of handguns. The NRA came and said, no, waiting periods, nothing happens. Let's make the background check mandatory.
Yeah. Why isn't it universal? That's another policy that Representative Moore points out in her piece, that Governor Walker has no interest in strengthening background checks and closing the so-called gun show loophole.
Well, a couple of reasons. One, there isn't any such thing as a gun show loophole. Most of the people who sell guns at gun shows are already federally licensed dealers, and they have to do the background checks at the gun shows just as if they were back at their brick-and-mortar gun store where they are licensed. The federal government says a bona fide gun show is a legal extension of their licensed premises. The background checks still have to be done. The universal checks mean that every farmer that wanted to go out and buy a new shotgun or give one to a member of his family would have to go through a background check. Once again, the law would affect only people who choose to obey the laws. The bad guys, who none of us would like to see armed, certainly aren't going to go through background checks voluntarily as they transfer. And once again, the unintended consequence is you create a new opportunity for crime where there will be more and more people outselling guns to the people on the street without any type of knowledge, any type of anything going on, because this is where the bad guys will choose to get their guns rather than even consider trying to get something through a gun store on a straw purchase.
Yeah. Well, what's the big deal if it just means a CCAP check that you don't even have to, that can be done almost instantaneously? What's the big deal if that farmer, if somebody gets checked for that?
Well, the difference is this. Let me give you a personal example. A couple of months ago, I was at a gun show up in Green Bay. And interestingly enough, I found an old Smith & Wesson revolver I wanted to add to my collection. And again, the seller was a federally licensed dealer. So I purchased the gun at the show, but I couldn't take it with me at that time because of the 48-hour waiting period. That meant I had to, at some different day, return to Green Bay to be able to purchase this firearm.
Yeah,
and if I couldn't do it within a 2 or 3 day period, it would require yet a second background check. And all of this cost money. Not only to the individual, but to the state as well, to the government doing this, all these checks on honest people. And the negative part of the whole idea of a waiting period on handguns is if somebody wants to do something criminal and they feel the only way they can do it is with a firearm, and they go to a gun store, and under the former law, they say, you can't get a handgun for 48 hours. All they have to do is say, well, what about that semi-automatic rifle, or what about that shotgun over there? The answer is, oh, you can take that with you right away. And then they think, well, that's a little not quite too concealable. So they just stop at a Menards or a Home Depot, buy a hacksaw, and within 5 or 10 minutes of sawing, the gun is down almost to the size of a handgun. What's the point?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to split hairs, but that's what I'm doing. So now the 48-hour waiting period is kaput. That doesn't have to happen. So what's the big deal of universal background checks then, if you know there's no waiting period or anything else?
Well, the idea of universal background checks is the same thing. The devil is always in the details. Here's what would happen, Joy. Let us say that I took you out and you decided you wanted to get a concealed carry license and you wanted me to instruct you and teach you how to do this. Under the universal background check proposals that have been there, remember, let's not talk about what they call them. Let's talk about what's actually the wording in the language of the bill. What would happen is you and I'd go out to a shooting range. I'd show you how to handle a firearm. Say, well, I'd like to be able to shoot. Oh, I'm sorry, Joe, you can't. Before I can hand you this gun, which means giving you possession of the gun, we're going to have to leave. We're going to have to go to a federal firearms dealer who is open for business at this time. He'll have to put that gun into his books. And then and only then is he allowed to do a background check under law. And after that background check comes back and it says that you're able to be in possession of a firearm, then and only then can I transfer possession of the gun to you. Interestingly enough, some of the proposals on universal background checks require that the check be done both on the transferor and the transferee as well. And this is what we'd have to do on such a simple thing as that.
All right, let me hold you there, Jim Fendry, because we do now have with us our scheduled guest for this segment, Congresswoman Gwen Moore. She is a Democratic U.S. representative for Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, and she was the author of an op-ed piece that appeared recently on Salon.com, which was headlined, "Milwaukee is Drowning in a Sea of Gun Violence, and Scott Walker Wants to Make It Worse." Good morning, Congresswoman Moore.
Joy, how are you?
I'm good. So we have been hearing from Jim Fendry up until this point, saying that in essence you have it all wrong. why do you say Governor Walker is going to be making things worse with his policies, the gun violence problem in Milwaukee?
Well, Joy, let me tell you, every year on December 30th, there is a Victims of Homicide Vigil done at one of the local area churches in our area. And since July 6th, we have more victims of homicide on July 6th of this year than we had all of last year. And so how does, for example, repealing the 48-hour waiting period diminish that number? It just doesn't. So I anticipate that this December 30th, a ceremony that, by the way, our Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark also attends every year, it's just chilling to think that that number is going to be greater. There is absolutely, you know, a three-day waiting period isn't tough. Joy, you know, we all remember the shooting at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. And if, in fact, Dylan Roof had been subjected to a rigorous background check, he would not have been able to purchase a firearm. And it's just an example of why it's so important to have a cooling off period, having enough time for law enforcement officials at the local level to confirm with the FBI that people do in fact deserve to have their constitutionally protected right to have a gun. There is no criminal background record. There's no mental illness, and what we've seen is that just last year, of the 8 million background checks processed by the FBI last year, over a quarter of a million of them could not be resolved within the 3-day period. So, You know, 3 days is not enough. 48 hours was not enough. And now Governor Walker has killed it. And we've seen a tremendous spike in homicides and gun violence this year.
Representative Moore, Jim Fendry points out that most of the homicides are happening in a very small section of Milwaukee. The spike in gun violence is just in this small section of Milwaukee. So you can't blame eliminating the background checks, because you would see this kind of spike all over the city or all over the state, not just in one neighborhood. What's your response to that?
My response to that is that, the background check is designed to stop the illegal sales of guns wherever they may occur. And certainly in the only city of the first class in the entire state, we need the protections of these laws. No one is trying to deny the right of someone who has a legitimate need to purchase a gun, be it for hunting or being a collector, whatever that purpose is. But it's important to have a consistent law so that you can, in fact, protect those people in the small area of Milwaukee.
Yeah. How about the argument that the criminals don't care about the law, that the bad guys don't care what the law says?
No, that's exactly right. Bad guys don't care about the laws, but the law ought to care about itself. So that, if you're trying to purchase a handgun, and I'm thinking back to the incident in Brookfield with Zena Daniels, where her perpetrator, her estranged husband, who lived in the Milwaukee County area, bought a gun on the internet, not subject to background check. And bought it literally on a fast food parking lot and killed Zena Daniels. The bad guys may not care about the law, but the law can stop, some purchases.
Yeah.
Again, I invoke the case of Dylan Roof, who shot the 8 people in church. He bought a gun. He didn't buy it from the trunk of a car. He didn't buy it as an underground sale. He bought it and evaded a legal process. That had that legal process been invoked, he would not have been able to purchase that gun. And so, no, bad guys don't care. But, the law should at least close that opportunity and that door. Yeah. For people to be able to get a gun.
We have less than a couple of minutes before a news break. President Obama last week called for common sense gun laws. What would such laws look like to you?
Universal background checks. The public, more than 81% of all folk in this state support common sense background checks. Background checks for mental illness, for criminal records. It would involve public and private sales of guns. When you stop and think, you can't even transfer your vehicle, Joy, without doing paperwork. Why does it not make sense to be able to track and trail the sales of guns at gun shows and at least shut down a public sale of a gun? Those are common sense laws that pretty much all Americans, gun owners and non-gun owners, support. And for those people who have legitimate reasons to collect guns or to buy guns, they should not be opposed to a 3 or 4 day background check. Certainly, domestic violence is a big problem in this country. and much domestic violence would be averted by having a common sense cooling off period for gun owners.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us. U.S. Representative Gwen Moore, representing Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, including the city of Milwaukee. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We just heard from Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who pointed a finger at Governor Walker's close relationship with the NRA and loosening of gun control laws, including eliminating the 48-hour waiting period for handgun purchases, as not being helpful for the gun violence problem in Milwaukee. Violence has spiked in Milwaukee, with the homicide count so far this year equaling the total number of murders in 2014. So we talked with Congresswoman Gwen Moore about the issue, and Jim Fendry. He returns with us. He is the director of the Wisconsin Pro-Gun Movement, former police officer for 20 years. He writes the blog Aim for Understanding, which is part of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Purple Wisconsin blog. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We've had a caller waiting for some time. Let me bring in Jeremy in Manitowoc. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. Out of the 86 homicides that were in Milwaukee up to this date, how many were gun-related, actual gun-related homicides? And secondly, out of the ones that were gun-related, were they purchased legally or were they stolen firearms? And I'll take my answers off you.
Yep. Jim Fendry, do you know?
I don't know that data. However, keep in mind that when we're talking about background checks, so on and so forth, which relates to this, because my answer is I don't know. If a person is unable to be able to buy a gun at a gun store because they're denied, that doesn't mean they can't get a gun. That just means they go somewhere else to get a gun. There are way, way, way far more than enough guns available in the criminal world to be sold. So it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, the Milwaukee stats show that all but 12 of the homicides that are being tracked, all but 12 are shootings. I think there's those 12 are probably stabbings or something else. But of the
if I may add mm-hmm. to something in that, Joy, and I'm sorry for stepping on your words there. What any of your listeners can do is go to their own computer and Google. They can get on Wikipedia. They can go on the site for the United Nations Office of Drug and Crime and take a look at what the rest of the world is like. There's absolutely no question that gun ownership in the United States is higher than any other place in the world. And that's primarily because we use guns for sporting purposes, and we have so many guns available, so many guns are being manufactured. But now take a look at just homicides, not gun-related homicides. If we take a look at homicides, you'll see that where you would think, because of what we read in the media, that the United States would be at the top of the list for homicides, we're almost towards the very end of the list for homicides. Countries that have never allowed their people to lawfully possess guns have far more homicides than we do in the United States. They just use other devices.
Yeah. What's your response to Representative Moore's example that the shooter at the South Carolina church would have been denied his gun had he had a thorough background check?
Well, the answer is published by the FBI. Where are the bad guys getting the guns? They do a study. And very, very few of the guns that are used in crimes and crimes of this nature actually a result of somebody going to a gun store, buying a gun, and going out and committing the crime. The guns are usually in circulation for quite a period of time. And that's part of the answer to it. Again, the gun issue isn't directly part of the crime issue. And if we look at all of the factors involved, and there's so many involved, we see it just doesn't make a difference. That doesn't mean that we're opposed to certain gun laws. It just means that even with them, the unintended consequence that I had mentioned earlier is that the bad guys, people wanting to commit crimes, are still able to find different areas of getting a gun. And surprisingly, one of the simplest way is calling 911 in many, many places in this country, not so much in Milwaukee or in Wisconsin. But in many places in this country, if somebody for a nefarious purpose wants a firearm, they just call the police and have them delivered. Because when the police arrive on an erroneous barking dog complaint, they physically overpower the police and take their firearms.
Representative Moore also said that we put laws on the books because they're common sense laws, not necessarily because the bad guys will or won't follow them.
Well, I don't think most of these laws follow common sense. I think whether you're pro-gun or anti-gun, you want to title your legislation as being common sense. But take a look at it. Read what it says. Look at what has happened in other places where they've done such things. This is why, as I've said before, to really understand the gun issue without even talking about the constitutional effects of or interaction with this, look and see what has it done. What good does it do? What was the purpose? Any of these laws that have been there and on the books really don't have an effect at taking the guns away from the bad guys. But that doesn't mean we don't try. One of the things that people who oppose the elimination of the 48-hour waiting period don't want to talk about is the idea of the extended delay. Under the previous law, if a person would go into a gun store and their name happens to be Thomas J. Jones, and the background check is made on Thomas J. Jones of a certain date of birth, the computers at NCIC hit on close. And when they hit on close, that means there's then either an immediate denial or a delay. Well, the delays have been limited to either two-day or two-day delays. And the government has said that's not enough time for us to determine whether this Thomas J. Jones is the person who is a felon or he's the Thomas J. Jones that never committed a crime in his life. So we extended that period of time, or I should say the authors of the bill extended that period of time from a three-day delay period up to a five-day delay period before the sale and the transaction can actually go through. Has it done any good? Well, sure. It possibly stops some prohibited people from getting guns from federally licensed dealers. Does that mean, again, they don't get any guns? No, it just means they go somewhere else.
Let's take a call from Dave in Kimberly. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Your guest has completely ignored the 48-hour waiting period or getting rid of it. The reason for it is if somebody is upset about something, it used to be they would go, if they wanted to, you know, kill somebody, they would go try to buy a handgun, but they couldn't get it for 48 hours.
Yeah, it wasn't just a matter of doing a background check, taking that time. It was to cool them off, Jim Fendry.
No, it wasn't. That was never the intention of the bill. And remember what I had said earlier. If somebody was so irate that they wanted to harm another person, and the only thing way they thought they could do it was with a firearm, and they had to wait 48 hours or longer for a handgun, they just say, well, forget the handgun. Give me the shotgun. I'm going to use that. Plus, all of the modern science and data refutes that whole idea. Starting way back in the 1950s, when a Dr. Marvin Wolfgang from the University of Pennsylvania authored a book that is still used today entitled Patterns in Criminal Homicide. And all of the studies since then come up with the same findings that he had. He said when a person is going to harm another person, and after all, we've been doing this since Cain and Abel, when a person is going to harm another person, they'll use the most efficient engine immediately available. So if a gun is there, clearly that's the most efficient engine. Failing that, a knife. Failing that, a club. Failing that, some other instrument. They don't say, oh, I'm so mad at my wife, I'm so mad at this person, I'm going to go out and shoot him with a handgun. No, they use what they have handy.
Gary in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. The question I have for Mr. Fender, I understand and can comprehend what he says about bad guys getting guns. But the question I pose to him, so then why isn't the gun lobby in favor of enacting laws to capture these criminals who are selling these weapons? Why aren't we doing more to try and find those people, since that's illegal, and prosecuting them and putting them behind bars?
We have less than a minute, Jim Fendry.
We've been screaming to have that done ever since the gun control laws of 1968. Of all the people who have committed crimes by lying on the background checks that they are not prohibited, and they're in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands, it might even be over a million now, only a handful, meaning like eight or nine, have ever been arrested, much less prosecuted for it. And when I say we, meaning organizations like our own here in Wisconsin, right to the NRA, have been screaming and screaming for gun law enforcement. But when you go into the prosecutor's office, the first crime that gets thrown out in plea bargaining is the gun crime. That gets, it disappears. Nobody's interested in it. Take a look at this idea.
Jim Fendry, I'm sorry, we're almost completely out of time. What do you want to see happen in Milwaukee to reduce the gun violence that's happening?
We don't have enough time to begin to go into it at depth, but it would have nothing to do with guns. It would have much more to do with strict enforcement of the law and of the laws, and allow the coppers to be able to do the job on the street without people telling them that they shouldn't do it, and trying to get the cooperation of the people who live in the area.
That sounds good. We will have to do another show on that in the future. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.